Market Saturdays 9 a.m. to 1 p.m. Winter location in the Salvation Army Building, Woodlawn Avenue, Saratoga Springs, New York. SaratogaFarmersMarket.org. And the Phantom Gardener Nursery, Rhinebeck, New York, providing the tools for the creation of sustainable landscapes and organic gardening. TheFantomGardener.com.
Hello, once again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Susan Arbetter, a mere facilitator during the next hour of radio that could change your life. This show is for all the people whose stoves are used for storage, whose dust kitties are making a home of their own in their kitchen, who fear the sound of taunting in-laws that is sure to follow a dry turkey. We are attacking Thanksgiving without fear with our favorite non-professional chef, David Rubel. Welcome to Vox Pop, David.
Thank you, Susan.
David Rubel is WAMC's American Presidents expert. He has edited many books on American history, including, to the best of my ability, The American Presidents, with Pulitzer Prize winner James McPherson. His latest book is The Coming Free, The Struggle for African American Equality, published by DK Publishing with a foreword by Representative John Lewis. And as many of you know who listen to the Roundtable, David is our What's for Dinner chef every other Wednesday. We have David on because every once in a while it's good to hear the perspective of someone who isn't a professional chef, who's just somebody like you and me who has a regular kitchen, not one of those fantastic Viking stoves, just, you know, the normal thing you have in your kitchen. So anyway, it's great to see you.
Thank you, Susan. In fact, I have a magic chef.
You do? You have a magic chef?
I have a lovely magic chef. In fact, it was a very special magic chef that they made for about 6 months and discontinued it. It's stainless steel.
Oh.
But other than that, it's pretty much like a regular
Everybody
stove.
Else, yeah. That's right. We would love to hear your questions and comments for David or your tips if you're a cook without fear, or better yet, call us up with your greatest culinary successes and failures. 1-800-348-2551. 1-800-34-TALK-1. So why don't we talk about your greatest culinary successes and failures?
Well, my real transformative event for Thanksgiving was when I moved the turkey out of the oven and started smoking it. It is just the way to go. Not only is it the best turkey ever to smoke it, it's so moist and flavorful. You know, you don't get that dry, bland breast meat. It's just great. And it means it's not in the kitchen. It's outside. So you have the stove to roast your sweet potatoes or do whatever you want.
You have that extra space.
It's great. And you don't have to watch. You don't watch it. You add a little extra charcoal, you know, some extra wood for the smoker. And I started out doing it just in a Weber kettle. And in fact, the recipe that we did, I think 3 years ago now, which is on the website, tells you how to do it in a Weber kettle. Since then, I have moved on. And as you know, I had my midlife crisis and bought my smoker. And I didn't just buy any smoker. I bought one that was trucked up from Georgia.
The Cadillac of smokers.
Oh, it is just a beautiful beast, and I love it dearly. And it can hold actually about, you know, 6 or 8 turkeys. And usually we do 1 or 2 extra just for later.
No, before you smoke your turkey, you brine your turkey.
I do brine my turkey. And brining is something that you can do with any kind of poultry. And often it's done with like chicken parts for just an hour or so before you fry them. What happens is putting the meat in the salt water, the salt acts as a way for the meat to absorb the water, so it puffs up and gets moister. So if you brine chicken before you fry it, when you fry it, it locks in all that moisture. I brine turkey for a different reason, although I'm sure it would help otherwise. I brine it with a lot of different flavorings, and that's also in the recipe. Yummy things like ginger and hot red pepper flakes and maple syrup and all kinds of stuff that seeps in over 2 or 3 days into the turkey meat. So when you smoke it or even roast it, it imbues it with extra flavor. Because really, turkey can be kind of bland.
Mm, it's the only brining meat that tastes dead, according to Joe.
Brining is a really good thing. And what makes it possible, of course, is living in the fabulous Northeast. Because turkeys barely fit into my refrigerator as they are. They're so big. And we brine it in this enormous stock pot that we have that I bought as a closeout from MarthaStewart.com. So we call it Martha. It is this huge enameled stock pot that has a lovely cobalt blue enamel on the inside. And so we put the turkey in that with all the stuff. And then I just take it and I enclose the handles and the top with about 14 of those big fat rubber bands that come with broccoli because I don't want the little creatures that get into the garage to get into my turkey. And that seals it really well. And it's almost always cold enough. Not today, but it will be by the weekend, cold enough to keep it out there for a couple of days brining.
Now, I know we are talking about Thanksgiving without fear, but would you like to share a culinary failure with us?
Oh, really? They're all other people's, you know. The
It's somebody else's fault.
I don't know. I guess that the... As in all families, I think there was a struggle in mine when Thanksgiving passed from my mother to me.
Oh, yes.
Or rather, when I wrested it away from her kicking and screaming. I think there are mortality issues involved with all this. And before I did that, I made an attempt to help my mother cook Thanksgiving. And that was not good. That was not good on an emotional level and not good on a culinary level because I realized that, and we'll talk about this later, but I believe that if you're going to have a good Thanksgiving and you're going to enjoy it, you have to be really organized. And it's impossible for me to be organized in my mother's house. It just doesn't work.
I have a quick one. My mother came to our house for, I'm not sure if it was for Thanksgiving or whatever it was for, but we were having a turkey. And every single thing I did, she had sort of an alternative way of doing it that was better. And finally I said, you know, Mom, I can do this myself. I can put the turkey in the stove. She went outside. She came back in about 5 minutes later and said, "I've had an epiphany." Those were her exact words. And I said, "Oh, Mom, what's your epiphany
You're
about?
You're an adult now, Susan."
"I'm no longer needed to make Thanksgiving." And I said, "You're right. I can do it myself. I'm over 20. I also have a great culinary failure, and then we're going to get to the phone calls. Just to make people understand that, you know, we're talking real cooking here, not the fantasy cooking that you get at Bon Appetit. I was heating up olive oil in my studio apartment in Boston in a pot, and this was 1989. And I was on the Nutrisystem diet at the time, and they give you boxes of Nutrisystem food. All right, so I had all my Nutrisystem food piled up on the shelving above the stove. So I'm heating up my oil. Magically, the oil in the pot catches fire. Flames reach out of the pot, burn all of my Nutrisystem food.
And flambe.
Flambe. The pot falls on the floor, burns a hole through the linoleum, and I didn't eat dinner that night. Okay, so what we're going to do is hear your culinary tales of woe and, of course, your questions as well. 1-800-348-2551, 1-800-34-TALK-1. We're going to take a few phone calls, then we're going to go back to David John in Saugerties. How are you today?
Just excellent. I am a professional chef, but what I've always done, brine a turkey. You got to brine it. But since turkeys are so cheap this time of year, I get two. I get one little one that I cook whole so you can present it on the table and look very nice. But I quarter the bird that I'm going to slice because the legs never cook at the right temperature as the breast. And if you cook the legs to done, the breast is overdone. So if you quarter it, you can pull those legs or the breasts out before the legs are done, but you still have a nice little bird for presentation.
Oh, that's a great idea.
John, have you considered, you know, getting a wax bird maybe? And you could use the same one every year.
You know, that's a great idea. I could cook one up perfect and dip it in lacquer and just put it in with the Christmas decoration.
Isn't that what food photographers do?
Yeah, that's true. It is dipped in lacquer. But that's the way I've always done it, to keep the presentation nice but have a very good bird. And like you said, you flavor it with your brine, so it just flavors excellent.
I think that's a really interesting idea. Of course, what all turkey methods struggle with is, as John points out, how do you get the breasts done but not overdone while still getting the dark meat done? And that's why people do the paper bag thing, or they cover the breast with cheesecloth and keep dripping stuff on it. And this is not a problem, by the way, with smoking.
No, I smoke too, but it's I have a nice big smoker. But, you know, a lot of people are, you know, they don't smoke. They don't like smoked meat either.
Right.
I have a lot of family members. Oh, it tastes like smoke.
John, how do you feel about the paper bag method?
That doesn't work.
Yeah, there you go.
So quarter the turkey.
And how about this? Aren't some people cooking them now in like oven-safe plastic bags or something?
Yeah, I've seen that too. And I don't know. I can't imagine that somehow the chemicals that are in that plastic are leaching somehow into that turkey.
That is not healthy.
No, I don't think so. I like to quarter my bird, pull them out in separate temperatures, and you're good to go.
So where do you cook professionally?
I own a restaurant in the Adirondacks.
Oh, well, what's the name of it?
It's the Windfall Bar and Grill in Cranberry Lake.
Joe and I will go up there sometime. We'll order turkey.
That sounds good.
See you later.
All right, bye.
Over to Anthony now on the thruway. Hey, Anthony, how are you?
Good. How about you?
Good. You have you have a wife who does some very exploratory cooking?
Yeah, I'm a truck driver on the road, and I make her make this turkey every year. Now, I'm pretty sure a lot of people don't know what Cornell sauce is, but it's a sauce that was made by a university professor from Cornell. He named it after the university. You can find the recipe on the internet if you Google it. And my wife will cook the turkey in a vat of the Cornell sauce inside of a crock pot.
So listen, Anthony, we're going to hang up because we can barely hear you. But I think what Anthony was saying is that his wife uses, was it a Cornell sauce?
He's quite right. I've never heard of it.
Okay, but.
Talking about culinary failures, I have a bad emotional connection with crock pots.
Oh.
Because, you know, that's what I ate out of for years because I lived in a family where both my parents worked. So mom would take a bunch of stuff, put it in the crock pot, and I remember to this day, it looked like it was a brick-sided thing with red splotches. And then magically, soggy food would be ready. At 6 o'clock.
Hey, David, at least your parents gave you hot dinners. I ate tuna fish for about 12 years. Anyway, so Cornell sauce in a crock pot. Thank you, Anthony. We're going to go back to the phones. Is it Detchen?
Yes, Detchen. Thank you.
Sure.
I have a great fear. In fact,
Why we're here.
Oh, good. It's so great that my children leave the house whenever I attempt to do this. And it's something as simple as pie crust.
Oh, you've come to the right guy.
Well, you must have missed What's for Dinner yesterday morning because we addressed specifically the fear of pie crust. And, Detchen, I used to have it as well. And that's why I always let my mom do the Thanksgiving desserts so I wouldn't have to deal with the pie. But then I realized that was foolish, and I had to get over my fear. And it's really easy to make a decent pie crust. It may be really hard to make the fancy French restaurant pie crust, but it's really easy to make a decent pie crust. It's on the website. In fact, it's up on the main page, which is WAMC/roundtable/.
It's WAMC.org/roundtable, and then just click on the What's for Dinner link on the right-hand side
of
the page.
There you go. And basically, I will give you it very briefly, because there are almost no ingredients in pie crust. You take your flour. You put it in the bowl of a food processor. You add some shortening, some vegetable shortening, some Crisco, and you add some butter. I think it's a cup of flour, 4 tablespoons of shortening, 6 tablespoons of butter. You want everything to be as cold as possible. And you pulse it in your food processor till you get a combination of coarse meal and sort of pea-sized lumps of butter. And then you drizzle in a little iced salt water, just a couple of tablespoons, and the dough will all come together. You take it out of the food processor, you wrap it in some saran wrap, and you put it in the refrigerator for an hour so that it can relax. And then you roll it out, put it in a pie shell, let it relax some more in the refrigerator, and you bake it for about 15 minutes while it's covered with some aluminum foil, then another 10 or 12 to brown it up, and you've got pie crust.
Wonderful. I've never used a food processor before, so I will whip for pie crust, so I will try that. Thank you very much.
You're welcome. And don't touch it.
Yeah, don't touch because it warms it up. Thanks, Detchen.
Bye-bye.
You are listening to our hungry historian, David Rubel, on this historic Vox Pop on Thanksgiving Without Fear. Give us a call with culinary tips, questions, successes, failures, 1-800-348-2551. We're going to go over to Nancy in Fort Plain. Hi, Nancy. How are you?
Hi, fine. Well, I have been doing something for 41 years that I got out of the Adele Davis Eat Right her cookbook. She was, you know, the health food maven back then, but mm-hmm. in any event, it's slow cooking, and I've never heard it discussed by anyone other than someone who made a very derogatory comment about bacteria and such. But, however, you just take the bird, and it's 20 minutes. I always do a 20-pound, 21-pound turkey, 20 minutes a pound, and you add that up, you know, times 20 or whatever the weight of the bird is, and you multiply that by 3, and you put it. You rub it down with butter and pepper, no salt, because her contention was that the salt draws out the juices of the bird. Any event, you put it in a roasting pan on a rack, because, again, her contention was that roasting is open and up above the heat. But in any event, I want to get to the turkey. And I always stuff the turkey, incidentally, as well. Put the turkey in, and it's rubbed down. Sometimes I put bacon across the breast. And you turn the oven to 175, 180 at the most. It depends upon how accurate your thermometer is, your thermostat. And you shut the door. And I mean to tell you, in 20, 24, you put a temperature.
It works for you.
In 20 hours, usually about 21, you open that door, although I open it 15 times because I never really trust it, even after 41 years. You have a bird that is evenly browned down to the underside.
That takes a lot of time, though, Nancy.
Well, yeah, but you don't do anything. I mean, you know, the only thing you have to remember is that you have to bake your things ahead of time. But, I mean, literally, you do nothing, and this bird looks like it ought to be on a table in some gourmet magazine.
David?
The white meat, when you slice it, you can put it in the refrigerator in a plate uncovered, and it will be moist 4 days. I mean, it's incredible.
Well, Adele, certainly, if you cook something at a high heat, generally it cooks the outside quickly and doesn't cook the inside at all. So it makes sense to cook things at a slow heat. I'm not a food nutritionist. I'm sorry, Nancy. But there are some issues about bacteria growing, and I don't want to be put in a position about making a derogatory remark, but it reminds me of that scene in The Accidental Tourist.
Exactly. I know. When I saw that, I got a charge. Well, let me just say that with this method, when you put the turkey in, you put it in at 350 for 1 hour, mm-hmm. which kills surface bacteria. But I also was a laboratory tech for years, and I worked in microbiology, and mm-hmm. I happen to know that how long it takes to kill the bacteria, and once it's dead, you don't have to kill it for 24 hours. But, you know, I've had huge family dinners and guests every year and never had a problem and always had the most beautiful bird you can imagine. And I'm sure most people won't try it because I did with much trepidation the first year. But
duly noted.
And I was about to say, Nancy, it sounds like you certainly cook without fear.
Absolutely.
Thank you very much for calling.
You're welcome.
Susan, I don't know if you've seen The Accidental Tourist, but there's this lovely scene when William Hurt and David Ogden Stiers are over at their elderly mother's house for Thanksgiving, and she's baking the turkey. She's roasting it in this way, but I believe the temperature is like 125 or 150, and they're looking down at it the night before, and one says to the other, "My, look at all those bacteria growing."
We're talking about Thanksgiving without fear and hopefully without salmonella poisoning this afternoon with David Rebell, 1-800-348-2551, 1-800-34-TALK-1. We're going to be hearing from David, Mark, Rick, and Adam right after this short break.
Support for Vox Pop comes from Adams Ferricker Farms, Kingston, Poughkeepsie, Newburgh, New York. Farm Fresh Produce Butcher Shop, Fresh Seafood Sweet Shop, Specialty Foods, over 200 cheeses. At Mountain Buddies, Hudson, New York, Mountain Buddies specializing in equipment and apparel for outdoor pursuits. Paddling, hiking, climbing, and camping. MountainBuddies.com.
We're talking about Thanksgiving without fear today with David Rubel. And Michael Stymack found the barbecue, the Cornell sauce on the website that Andrew, I think the truck driver, was talking about. His wife does it in a, did he say a
Anthony.
Crock pot? It was Anthony.
And he said in a crock pot.
In a crock pot. And if you just go to, if you Google Cornell barbecue sauce, I think that you will find it. So another thing that we briefly wanted to touch on before we get back to the phones is how we can make the holiday we want and not the holiday we are obliged to have. What are your thoughts?
Well, I think there are two issues. One is sort of the emotional side and one is the culinary side. And on the emotional side, you know, I know that sometimes I'll invite someone to to come over for Thanksgiving, and they'll say, "Oh, we'd love to come, but you know, we have to go to Great Aunt Martha's because it's such an obligation." And I think that, you know, I love Thanksgiving; it's one of my favorite holidays, and it shouldn't be about obligation, and it shouldn't be about, well, that's the way we've always done it, so I guess we have to keep doing it. It's a really great holiday. You get Thursday off, and most people get Friday off, too. The kids are happy. There's football on, although that's actually a problem for me. I have not figured out, you know, I'm not interested in the Detroit Lions, and they're the early game. I'm interested in the Cowboys, and that's dinner time. Why can't they flip it? But that's my own.
That's another pee. Vox yeah. Pop, David.
And I think that people would have a much better time at Thanksgiving if they opened up a little bit and talked about what they liked. You know, just like in marriages, talk about what you want. As far as the culinary side goes, I think that you have to look at it like a military operation. If you're going to be feeding, you know, 8, 10, 15, 20 people, you're not just going to whip it up that morning. And if you try to wait until the last day, you're not going to enjoy your guests. You're not going to enjoy the time. Your house will be in chaos. And at the end of it, you'll say, gee, we really should do more in advance next year. And then you'll forget about it. So we have a plan. And I write it down. I type it up. And it pretty much, you know, it begins.
You have a typewritten plan?
Yeah, sure. Well, I'm a writer. I do everything
You're
on the
hilarious.
Computer. And, you know, and for the Wednesday and Thursday, there are times next to everything. Because you have to allow enough time, you know, start the stuffing, make the cornbread for the stuffing. That's Wednesday. You make the stuffing on Thursday. But you have to start. In fact, tonight is the first entry on the plan. It's go over the recipes and make the shopping list. We shop over the weekend, but not for everything, because there is the issue of refrigerator space. Unless you have two or three refrigerators, you have to be careful
That's
about
right.
that. So we'll plan to buy the more exotic things that we need to have on hand or for the things that we're prepping early in advance. And then we'll buy the extra milk and eggs the day before or even the same day. But you have to plan all this out. And if you take a little time in advance to think about it, it works. You know, you want to plan for the various contingencies. Perhaps if the Joint Chiefs of Staff took this approach, we'd be in better shape.
So planning and communication, the key to the great Thanksgiving. Another thing that you do is, you know, you put the collard greens in the cooler in the basement. You utilize space in such a way that there's enough refrigerator space for everything else.
Yes. My clever and lovely wife, Julia, figured out a number of years ago that it was much easier to chop the collard greens and remove the stems. Not when guests are there. And in fact, it can be done a day or so in advance. And what she does is she preps all the collards on Wednesday, and she'll take them and wrap them gingerly with a couple of damp paper towels, put them in our Coleman cooler, and stick them in the basement. And collards are really sturdy. They're totally fine the next day. And then she just has to – we sort of stir fry them. We do this great thing that my we have regular, as most people, regular Thanksgiving guests, the Hoffs. My friend Mark Hoff from many years back when he and I edited math textbooks together in our nonage. And Mark is actually the male Martha Stewart. He is, and instead he works as an environmental energy consultant. But he is the male Martha Stewart, and I keep telling him, Mark, you know, face your true destiny like Luke Skywalker. Open a B&B, sell antiques out of the rooms, and cook for people because he's fabulous. And he taught us how to cook collards. And what he does is he chiffonades them. He cuts them into very thin slices and then in some oil with salt and pepper, quickly fries them. And it's the best way to make collards. It's so much better than
the bacon.
Those stewed, you know. The collards I used to have, like in college, you know, sitting in the chafing dish.
No good.
Oh, this is so... Oh, you'll... it makes collard. It's my favorite green vegetable now because of this way of cooking it.
Wonderful. Mark, we love you. All right, it's back to the phones. We're talking about Thanksgiving without fear, culinary tips, questions, successes, failures. Over to David in Ballston Spa. Hi, David.
Hi, good afternoon, everybody.
How are you?
I'm wonderful. My thoughts on your show are just, it's just so much fun, and you're making me hungry just thinking about it.
Excellent.
Now, don't eat till next Thursday, and then maybe you'll finish your plate.
I will do my best. We go out of town actually for Thanksgiving, so that leaves my sister-in-law with all the leftovers and all the goodies afterwards. Mm-hmm. So we generally make a turkey in advance, and I did it actually last night. And what I do is actually just baste the outside of the turkey once or twice in the beginning with either peanut oil or grapeseed oil because it has such a high flash point and mm-hmm. very little taste, and then put the whole bird into a very hot oven, 450 to 500 degrees even, for half an hour or so till the skin all sears on the outside. It just starts to brown up. Then I turn the temperature way back down to, say, 3 1/4 until it's done with a meat thermometer, and it's just so exquisitely moist. It's marvelous. And inside the cavity, I don't stuff it, but I put, you know, say, a handful of fresh herbs, rosemary, sage, leaves, things like that, whatever
nice.
You know, looks good in the store that day.
Maybe a little lemon, too?
Yeah, or I'll put a whole lemon in,
yeah.
Just, you know, prick it and leave the lemon inside the whole
great
time.
Idea.
Way to go. Great. It's, in fact, that's how I make roast chicken. I don't mess around. I just roast it, starting at a high temp in order to, you kind of sear it that way.
Yeah, exactly.
And then lemon and a couple sprigs of rosemary or whatever I get out of the garden.
It's, yeah, you're my long-lost brother, Musty.
Listen, and it all comes down to getting a good bird.
Right,
David? You got to get a good bird.
This is a natural one, you know, no yep. artificial anything's, you know, inoculations or anything else to make it fatter. My kitchen disaster was also a Thanksgiving experience probably 30 years ago. I'd come home from college, and between going back and forth between houses and friends and so on, my mom started to cook a cake that I liked for dessert. And she got partway through it. She was called away. She said, "I'm right here," in the recipe. She pointed to it and said, "Would you take over?" I said, "Certainly." So I started to take over, and I went for a while, and I got called away. And I said to my brother, "Here, finish it. I'm right here in the recipe." So between the three of us, we made this phenomenal-looking cake that was absolutely inedible.
Right. It had 42 eggs. And,
it was just beautiful. And the thing was, it looked so good, and we knew it should taste good, so we couldn't bear to throw it out. So we just kept it around. And weeks later, it was still moist. It was the scariest thing.
It was not from nature.
I don't know what it was.
Well, that's hilarious.
David, I actually have a suggestion for you. Bring a cooler and insist on your equal share of the loot at the end of the meal.
Exactly. That's a good idea.
David and David, thank you very
thank
much.
You.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Over to Mark, who has, you remember, 4 weddings and a funeral. This is 2 disasters and a success.
Yeah, hi.
Hi.
When I was a young child, I lived next to my great grandmother and great grandfather, and I was lucky to do that. And yeah. She was born in 1883,
wow. And
so she was used to cooking the old methods. And she had a wood stove, and she did all of her vegetables and her pies out in the wood stove. And she would put the turkey in the kitchen, which had a kerosene stove. And 9 times out of 10, it didn't light. And by 3:30 in the afternoon, when the whole family was there, the bird wasn't even started. And so we ended up having to do everything in reverse. That was my great-grandmother.
Oh, that's great.
My grandmother, on my father's side, was from Poland and Russia, and she believed that the turkey should be parboiled in salt water for about 1.5 hours and then dumped out and then baked for another couple hours with no aluminum foil over it, nothing. And my grandfather, who lived to be 100, said, "Frieda, how can you always make everything taste like pulpwood?"
Was your grandmother my grandmother?
Yeah.
Oh, that's so funny.
My grandmother's name actually was Frieda.
Well, and it's a couple of my family, too. But the thing is that she made great pies and stuff, but she felt like there should be no fat on any meat whatsoever. And
You have to cook all of the bacteria out.
And all the nutrition.
Yeah, of course. Yeah.
Well, but usually fat is part of it. I mean, schmaltz, right?
Well, and the thing is
then we
that,
pour the fat back later.
It was inedible. I mean, it was so dry.
Yeah, I couldn't eat my grandmother's cooking either, except for her Italian food, which
here's
she
my,
did really well. I don't know why
hilarious.
Jews make good Italian food. But
here's my success. We live up in Washington County and on a road that's very rural, and everybody has family who lives elsewhere or it's just convenient. So we, my house has several fireplaces in it, so we tell everybody, we'll have the ham, we'll have the turkey, and you bring all the fixings.
Oh, nice.
And so we have like 45 or 50 people at a time. And they all know what to do because we do it frequently with, you know, we share each. And we
right, like so you have like colonels and captains, right, and majors, and they all know what to do.
And you're the general. Yeah.
No. They, 4th of July, it's at somebody else's house.
You know, okay.
So we have a system. And we actually do that sometimes during the week. So it makes a success. Now, when you make stuffing, I would suggest that instead of using any water, use a decent quality Merlot or Cabernet as a way of moistening the things inside. And then use that same Cabernet. You can saute a fair amount of garlic, I'd say maybe 5 or 6 cloves at least, in oil, and then add the rest, some wine to it, and then use that as your basting thing for the outside, and or you can marinate it overnight if it's thawed out. Put it in a bag and put that in it, and then when you cook it, that you have that little flavor of the Merlot or whatever wine you choose.
And then, do you drink the red wine?
Wine? You might choose the same one or or another. I have made hundreds of gallons of wine, dandelion wine.
You definitely are kind of person. Maybe we'll come over.
I remember, I've trained Susan that she knows what kind of wine to use to cook with.
Only the kind you want to drink.
You got it.
Yeah. Well, when you're making wine, you always use the finest ingredients. When you're cooking with wine, you use the finest. And like, for example, I particularly like Malbec. It's Trapiche.
Whoa!
I like Malbec.
Heavy duty wine.
Well, it's substantial.
It's a mouthful.
Yeah, but using that kind of wine for cooking with the stuffing, by the night before, if you marinate the turkey in it and then put the stuffing in, because you don't want it to get, you know, the salmonella, you don't have to baste it quite as much, and the flavor comes
fantastic.
Through.
Fantastic. These are great tips, Mark.
Thanks.
You might get a few extra guests at your Thanksgiving.
Okay.
See ya.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
All this talk of family, Susan, reminds me of one of my great lingering ambitions,
oh.
Which is, yes, I want to do a monologue about my family, you know, Spalding Gray kind of thing. And one of the highlights is my great-grandmother, who passed away before I was born, she died cooking. And it was Passover, but it's almost the same thing. She died over the stove, almost literally, making, you know, way too much stuff. Way too much stuff.
Of course it was
too
much.
And she was being cared for by my great uncle, who was a physician, her son. And of course, when she died, his siblings blamed him for killing their mother.
Oh, that's going to make for a good monologue. All right, back to the phones. You can write to David directly. Adam in Clifton Park, how are you?
Good. How are you guys doing?
Fine, thank you. We're having a great time talking about food.
Great. I got a story leading up to a question.
Great.
My grandfather, when he was still alive, worked for Purdue as he organized the truckers. And he was so in the company that when he passed away, we actually got a call from Frank Purdue Jr. to, like, wish our family well.
Wow.
But naturally, Thanksgiving was his time of year. I mean, it's Purdue, you know?
Yeah.
So he knew his stuff. And there was always this debate that I had with my grandfather and even my father about how to carve the turkey. They would always carve it cold and serve it cold. And I always thought it was such a waste to have this wonderful, warm, hot turkey. Then I get it, and it's cold, and it doesn't taste very good to me anymore. Now, they said that you couldn't carve it hot because it was just too difficult and it would fall apart. And that sort of leads up to my question. Is it possible to carve a hot turkey and serve it hot? And even if it is only possible to serve it cold, what's the best way to carve a turkey?
Okay. There are many, many issues involved in this. I should begin by saying that I do not carve the turkey. My wife does not trust me with very sharp knives. She carves the turkey. She's also very good at it. The issue about – now, when you mean cold, you mean really cold or you mean room temperature?
I mean that it would get down to about room temperature, but then when you ended up carving the turkey and actually serving it, by then it was cold.
Right.
And the fix was to serve hot gravy on top of the turkey, but that never quite did it for me.
Anyway, basically, after you cook any meat, you don't cut it for two reasons. One reason is you want it to rest. It, like Pido, it rests, it relaxes, it kind of tenderizes. You don't cut anything. You know, you don't take a steak off the grill and cut it right away, ever. because it needs to relax. The other reason is the juices are reabsorbed as the meat cools. So the theory I'm sure that your father had was if the juices are reabsorbed a little when it's lukewarmed, imagine how much will be reabsorbed when it's actually cold. I think you can overdo it. So when you take a turkey out of the oven, you don't want to cut it right away. It's a big bird. It's absorbed a huge amount of heat. In fact, it'll continue cooking for a while. So you want to let it rest at least 15 minutes and, half an hour. You could even let it sit for an hour. Because the smoker is a little harder to control than the oven, so sometimes it gets done a little quicker. It can sit and stay warm for really a long time.
Okay, great.
So
is there a best place to start? Because I know that my dad, the surgeon, and my grandfather, the turkey man, both tend to start like with the legs, and they'll sort of like cut the legs off and then go for the breast.
I think that this, without being crude, it depends whether or not you're a breast man. The way my wife does it, and I know this only by observation, is she cuts off the entire breast first in one whole piece by slicing down between the breast bone and the breast itself, just kind of cutting down and around. So she's got that big, it looks like, a wing-shaped thing. And then she takes that, puts it on a platter, and slices that. And that works really well for her. Then once she's got that off, it's easy for her to attack the rest of the carcass. And I know that's how she does it. I don't think it really matters.
Okay, is that like a way to get like the best flavor in the turkey as opposed to like...
No, I think it's the cooking that matters for that, Adam,
okay.
not the cutting. But I definitely recommend letting it sit for a little bit. Not till it's, cold, but...
How long is a little bit?
Half an hour.
Yeah. Well, you've definitely put to rest a long family dispute.
But there is a reason to do it. You don't want to cut it right away.
Great. All right, thanks a lot.
Unless,
thank
of course,
you,
the kids are screaming and then...
then you have to serve them. Good luck, Adam.
Thanks.
Bye. 1-800-348-2551. This show is flying by. It's already time for our next break. Greg, Judy, Rich, and Martin, hang in there. We're going to get to your calls right after this.
Support for Vox Pop comes from the Phantom Gardener Nursery, Rhinebeck, New York, providing the tools for the creation of sustainable landscapes and organic gardening. TheFantomGardener.com. And the Glens Falls Symphony Orchestra, joined by composer and conductor Gunther Schuller, for a picture gallery concert to include his composition and Mussorgsky's, November 19th at the Glens Falls High School, glensfallssymphony.org.
David Rubel is here, and he's WAMC's American President's Expert. We're not talking about presidents today. No, we're talking about turkey and Thanksgiving without fear. Why do you think, David, I think that you're a very introspective person. You're very smart. You're someone who notices a lot of different things. Why is it that disputes break out during Thanksgiving? Family disputes, squabbles.
Susan, obviously you have a family squabble in mind. Tell me about your childhood.
No.
I think that it's a pressured day. There are usually a lot of people in the house, more than the house can hold comfortably. Some people are perfectly happy to be sitting around. Others are kind of waiting for something to happen. The people whose house it is are very distracted by dealing with all the food. And often I find a lot of relatives don't like each other and don't like to fess up to it. And so there's a natural tension. I've always made it a point not to let my mother invite the relatives I don't like. And then it's a much happier day. But it gets back to that sense of obligation with the holiday. If anyone feels that they're doing something out of obligation, they're not doing it with great generosity of spirit, as my wife Julia likes to say. That's sort of her standard. And I think that you want to try to set things up so you can feel better about what's going on.
So separate relatives who don't like each other. Probably best. And keep them out of the alcohol. Too much alcohol.
I would guess. My personal philosophy is just because someone's related to you doesn't mean you have to like them or have to spend time with them. My grandmother disagreed. but my poor late lamented grandmother is now no longer setting up Thanksgiving, so I get to call the shots.
I have a
more
wonderful plaque that Paul Elisha gave me that says friends are the family you choose.
I think that's true.
Over to Greg, who's in the car. Hi, Greg. How are you?
Hey, how you doing?
Fine, thanks.
Just a couple of comments. The gentleman that called earlier that said cut it in quarters and go that route with it. If you don't have to have that whole bird look on your table, definitely the best way to go.
Yeah, he was the one who suggested, he was the professional chef who said he made two turkeys.
Yeah,
one
who
for
clearly
display.
Knew what he was talking about.
Yeah, that's great. What else, Greg?
If you don't have two turkeys or two ovens to do that, then I would suggest salt the cavity really good and then sear the outside of it high heat and for a short period of time in the oven, kick the temperature back down, and then take the turkey out and turn it upside down and let gravity do the basting for you.
Oh.
And you'll find that it comes out pretty tender. And it also serves a purpose of where it kind of shields the breast meat a little bit from the heat, and it will tend to cook that a little slower, and it cooks the dark side of it a little bit faster because it's exposed to more of the heat. And it kind of almost balances out the time factor, and you come out with a pretty decent bird.
That's logical,
great.
Yeah.
And listen, Greg, while we have you on the phone, how do you feel about your family?
How do I feel about my family?
Yeah.
Well, I got mixed feelings about my family.
Okay, put one down for Mix.
Okay, mixed feeling. Greg, thanks a lot for calling.
Bye.
Bye.
Call off and take my
bye. Okay, bye. So you don't have to be honest about that question if you're asked, just so you people know. But, David, what about salt, no salt? We have Greg saying he salts, and then the caller before says no salt. So what is the answer?
This is my guess. This is my informed speculation. Definitely when you put salt in water and a bird in salted water, the salt does not leach out. It leaches in. But that's because it's in solution. I think if you put salt on just salt on something, it leaches out. Now, why exactly it does that, we'll have to ask Harold McGee.
Okay.
But for instance, if you take often people when they cook eggplant, they salt it first to leach out some of the moisture because the salt's dry and it pulls moisture out of it and it makes – you know, makes it all mushy, sort of. And that's part of the salt breaking something, breaking down the flesh. So I think, in fact, both are right. I think that in solution, it helps the meat become more moist. But out of solution, just with salt, it probably will take some moisture out of it.
Over to Judy now in Saratoga, who has a very good question. Hi, Judy.
Hi. My question is, this is my first Thanksgiving that I'm cooking, and I talked to Mom, and she gave me some advice. She says, forget brining, you have to use the turkey bag, which you guys have said no. And then I also asked her how big of a bird, and she said, and it's just going to be myself and three other people, she said 20 pounds or bigger.
Okay. Now, I'm not an expert on turkey size, but I can tell you, with all due respect to your mother, that's nuts. A 20-pound bird is enormous. I think we're going to have a 16-pound bird for 6 adults and 5 children. You know? And there's going to be a lot left over.
Remember, there's so many side dishes, too.
Yeah. I think a small bird is like 12 pounds. I think you can get a bird that's like 12, 13 pounds. I think you're looking at a small bird. Now, here's the other thing. You can make great leftovers with the turkey. And who wants to cook after Thanksgiving? Depends how much you like turkey tetrazzini, turkey pot pie, soup with turkey, nabiyaki udon made with turkey. Turkey holds really well in the refrigerator for a week. So, you know, you'll have plenty of leftovers, you'll give it to your friends. But I would stick to a small bird, and I would, you know, I'd say 12, 13 pounds. You'll be fine.
What about the bag?
I'm not for the bag.
We've voted the bag out, Judy.
Okay. If I do brine, is it going to affect the flavor of the gravy?
Oh, that's a good question, too.
Well, the turkey's not going to burn unless you have it on some incredibly high heat. I favor the idea, if you're not going to smoke it, of high heat at first and then lower, like 320, you know, like 400, 450, and then down to 325. Sounds good to me. High heat for like half an hour, 40 minutes maybe, and then continue cooking until it's done. If you have it at 325, you're not going to burn anything. You may dry the bird out if you cook it too long, and you have the issue of dark meat doesn't cook as fast as the breast meat does. The gravy will be fine. There are different theories about how to protect the breast meat. Basting is one. Covering it with something is another.
What about the flipping it around, like I think Earl said?
I think the flipping around is worth doing, but you don't really want to cook in the fat. So probably you should get one of those big turkey holder things that go in roasting pans.
Mm-hmm.
And then I think it probably would make sense to start it out with the breast up, let the skin crisp, and then flip it.
Flip it.
Yep.
Okay.
I think that's good. And if not, I'm sure Susan can tell you how to get a tape of this show and listen to the 8 other opinions that have come previously.
Well, the good thing is it's my first time, so even if I bomb it, I can just say, it's my first time. I'm supposed to mess it up.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Don't worry about it. Plus, even if the breast dries out, just serve the dark meat.
I also have a trick for my own Thanksgiving meals, Judy, and it's called gin martini. Okay. And if everyone has had many gin martini, then they won't care what the turkey tastes like.
I like this tip.
Good luck, Judy.
Yeah, I'm all for that one.
Yeah, oh, I agree 100%. All right, we're going to go back to the phones over to Rich in New York. Hi, Rich. How are you?
Hey, I'm pretty good. I've been listening to your show and enjoying it tremendously.
Thank you. So you have figured out how to create the perfect turkey, and you did it by accident.
Yep, that's what the wife says, and that's what the family says when they come for turkey dinner.
Okay, Judy, I hope you're listening.
When we were newlyweds, we had our first turkey dinner with a huge family, and my wife and I couldn't figure out in one of those roasting pans which end was up. So we put the turkey in upside down.
Oh.
About halfway through, it was nice and brown on one side. The other side, of course, was not so brown. My wife said, you know, I think we did this backwards. So we flipped it breast side up, and when we were all done, it came out beautiful. The dark meat was done, the breast was done, golden brown. It was beautiful. And we've been doing it the same way ever since.
Well, that's pretty much the same theory that Earl had.
But he started
the other way.
Yeah, I think that's a good way to do it, if you're not going to smoke.
The caveat here is that smoking is the best thing to
right,
do.
Right, and nor am I a paid employee of the Smokers Association. I believe, get it the hell out of the kitchen.
Get it, put it in the smoker. But, Rich, do you have a smoker?
No, I've never tried that.
Well, no, neither do
you
I.
Don't, remember, you don't need a smoker. If you merely have a Weber kettle, a Weber kettle grill will do it fine. Mm-hmm. And all the instructions you need are on the website. I think it's in the archive called Thanksgiving Turkey on the Grill. I think that's what we called it. And boy,
I'll have to give it a look. Certainly want to give it a try. It's so warm this year, I might as well.
WAMC.org/roundtable, and then just click on What's for Dinner, and you're going to have to go into the archive from like last year, I think.
No, it's like 2003.
2003, okay.
Yeah, back when I was a young man.
Rich, good luck to you, and thank you for calling.
Thank you very much for having me.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye. We're going to go to Martin in Glens Falls now to hear a Thanksgiving disaster story. Once upon a time, there was Martin in Glens Falls.
Hello.
Hi.
Hi. This is not my disaster story, but it's an oft-told extended family tale from Pittsburgh. It was before my time.
Is this Schadenfreude, Martin?
My friend's grandmother was hosting Thanksgiving dinner, and the turkey slid off the plate and onto the dining room floor, and she just said, no problem, I'll get the other bird. She picked it up, took it back into the kitchen, rearranged it on the platter, and brought it back.
She's awesome. That's a great grandmother.
That isn't Schadenfreude, that's sang-froid.
Yeah, that really is. That's fantastic. Well, thank you very much for calling.
Oh, thank you. It's been a great show.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
This has been a very fun show. Do we have time for another phone call, or do you want to give a few tips?
No, aren't we blowing off whatever comes next to the best of my knowledge? Just keep going.
Let's
finish off with the nice people who've called.
Okay, Marjorie in Saugerties. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Oh, good.
Good. Listen, I have a question.
Yeah.
Can I prepare the stuffing the night before, but not stuff it into the bird? Is the danger in the stuffing into the bird? That's what I thought.
You definitely don't want to stuff it into the bird.
Right.
I would not, because of the eggs. I'm assuming you use eggs in your stuffing. I don't know this for sure, but my gut is it's not a good idea.
Do it immediately.
I would do is
I don't put eggs in. I although I don't eat meat, I make a sausage stuffing for those who do.
I know who this is, and you're hilarious.
I don't know that I'd mess around with that. What I would do though is I'd prep all the various parts. For instance, if you were going to have obviously there's bread in it.
Yes.
So you could, and it's also, the bread is good to have it dried out. So I would take your loaf of bread and chop that up into cubes the night before.
Right.
You can even leave it out on a baking sheet. If there's going to be you know, like rosemary or something in it, chop that up too and throw it in with the bread. You know, and it's sort of like making pancake batter. Put all the dry ingredients together and that's fine. Just don't add the wet till the last minute.
Okay.
That would be my advice.
Okay. I will accept your advice.
Have a great holiday, Marjorie.
You too, Susan.
Thanks.
Bye. Thank you.
Bye-bye.
You just don't want to make your guests sick. That's
No. That would be really, really awful. You know, we only have time now for one last quick thing, and that is to say that the one time that I did make a very good Thanksgiving, I threw fat at it. Duck fat from D'Artagnan.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that makes a good turkey.
Fat is yummy.
Yeah, well, there you go. We're out of time. I want to thank everybody who called in today, all the fearless people who are going to make a delicious Thanksgiving. I apologize to the fearless people that we left on the line. Clearly, we're going to have to do this again, David.
Apparently.
Okay. And a big thank you to our big kahuna of the Little Kitchen, David Rubel. His latest book is The Coming Free, The Struggle for African-American Equality, published by DK Publishing. And, of course, all of the recipes that we've been talking about today can be found on the Roundtable webpage. It's wamc.org/roundtable. And click on the What's for Dinner link on the right-hand side of the page. Have a wonderful Thanksgiving.
Thank you, Susan, and you and Bill, too.
Thank you very much. Underwriting support for Vox Pop comes from Adams Fairacre Farms, Kingston, Poughkeepsie, Newburgh, New York, Farm Fresh Produce, Butcher Shop, Fresh Seafood, Sweet Shop, Specialty Foods, over 200 cheeses, and the Saratoga Farmers Market Association. Producer-only market, Saturdays 9 to 1 p.m., winter location in the Salvation Army Building, Woodlawn Avenue, Saratoga Springs, New York, saratogafarmersmarket.org. I want to thank you once again for joining us for Vox Pop this afternoon. Our engineer has been Zach Malloy. Steve Bulletin answered our phones. I'm Susan Arbetter. Stay tuned for the news. Malloy! Steve Bulletin answered our phones. I'm Susan Arbetter. Stay tuned for the news.
This is Northeast Public Radio, WAMC FM 90.3 Albany, WAMK 90.9 Kingston, WOSR 91.7 Middletown, WCEL 91.9 Plattsburgh, WCAN 93.3 Canajoharie, WANC 103.9 Ticonderoga, WAMQ 105.1 Great Barrington, WAMC AM 1400 Albany, WRUN AM 1150 Utica, in Troy at 93.1 and online at WAMC.org.
Underwriting support comes from Realty USA's Geraldine Abrams, marketing local homes worldwide, geraldine.com, and Hayden Harnett,